Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Join us for a journey. As we go back to the great civilizations of the past, who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on episode 27, the 830s BC. Last time on The Fan of History, Shalmaneser III of Assyria stood on Mount Amanus. From there, he could see the Sicilian plain and Cilician, excuse me, not Sicilian, we're not in Sicily yet, and yeah. Contemplated invading what is today Turkey. Jehu, the first Jewish king of Israel, took power in Israel and killed everyone he did not like. So Dan, where are we going to go today?
We are going to go through the whole 830s BC. It's pretty dominated by the Assyrian Empire. It's the strongest state in the Near East, ruled by Shalmaneser III, who has already been around since 859 BC. And he has extended the extensive conquest of his dad, Ashurnasirpal II. There were alliances that were trying to stop Shalmaneser III, but they are all gone now. When you look at the Assyrian kings and their tales of conquest, they are very skewed towards the king. It seems like he is walking around and you don't hear about anyone else. But here I like to introduce a character in the Assyrian royal army. His name is Dayan Ashur. He is the Turtanu. That's the field marshal. So he's second in command of the army. He has probably been the field marshal since way back, and a possible date is 853 BC from the Battle of Karkardan.
Okay.
There is a theory out there that this guy is actually controlling Shalmaneser III since the Battle of Karkar, and there are even weirder theories out there. But I think he is a friend and a trusted underling of Shalmaneser III. And as we will see in this episode, the field marshal Dayan Ashur will become even more important by the end of this decade.
So how do we know this person exists?
Like, what? Well, he shows up in the record a bit later, but you can deduce that he was around even at this time. But he will be talked about, and that's not common for a field marshal. You maybe get their name, but we will get more than that from Dayan Ashur.
Okay.
So let's get into this. In 839 BC, Shalmaneser III invades Kyiv, and this is a state in northern Syria, southern Turkey. It's right in the war zone today.
Yeah.
And this state has a post Shalmaneser III from the first year of his reign under the same king, King Kate. So now Shalmaneser takes the royal army across the Euphrates, probably starting from Kal Shalmaneser, the city that he took from the Bitadini. Mm-hmm. And the kings of the Kati, that's northern Syria, the Neo-Hittites, they pay tribute, they provide auxiliary soldiers, they beg Shalmaneser not to beat them up. And then he invades the poor little land of Kew. There are some cities, Lusanda, Abarnani, and Kiswatni. They are plundered, and Shalmaneser erects steles in them. He erects this stele at the beginning and end of the country, according to his inscription. But King Kate still remains in power in Kew, somehow. And we're not sure why. So did they actually win this war, or did he submit? Or what happened? There might have been an invitation from another vassal state, which we'll talk more about. There is a stele called the Kilamuva stele, mm-hmm. that is written by the king of Samal. This is somewhat close to Kew.
Okay.
And he claims in an inscription that he hired the king of Assyria to protect him against the ruler of Adana. And the Assyrian sources seldom give us reasons for these campaigns, but it seems that the Assyrian Empire actually was obliged to protect their vassal states. So it wasn't just a one-way street. You just didn't pay money and avoided getting killed, but you actually got something for your tribute. And on this stele, there is this tale then of the king getting help from Assyria. And this might have happened in the same year and might have been the reason that Shalmaneser did not totally destroy Kew.
So basically he gets a better offer?
or he gets an, I have to do this because this is my vassal.
I see.
But in the next year, he goes a bit south into Damascus, the old enemy that is still around, under new leadership from Hazael then, which we talked about in the earlier episode. Mm-hmm. They invade around Damascus. Everybody on the way pays tribute. The Phoenician cities, which are quite near, they do pay tribute to Shalmaneser III as well. But there is no decisive result. Hazael managed to stick it out, and Damascus is still around. And there is a king in Tyre, the Phoenician city of Tyre on the coast of Lebanon, who makes an arrangement with Shalmaneser III. So the Phoenician cities are doing what they always do. They are providing services to the empire, and thus they remain free and rich. And they provide stuff that Shalmaneser can't get from anywhere else.
Seems like a good position to be in.
Yeah, they're actually in a great position. They've been in a great position since the Bronze Age collapse, because the Phoenician cities are the only ones who came out in a good state in 1200 BC. And now they are founding colonies. The Phoenicians are going to Italy and Sardinia. There seems to be a problem with dating the Phoenician colonies, because we've already talked about a colony in Spain. Mm-hmm. So why would they set up a colony in Spain before they set up colonies in Italy and Sardinia? Because the first thing they do, it seems, if you look at the dating, is to go all over to the other side of the Mediterranean. But at this point, there are several colonies, Sardinia, a lot of places. These are some weird names that nobody will recognize.
Okay.
They found their colonies at strategic points, close to the sea, peninsulas or islands with natural harbors. They trade with the Villanovans in Italy. And they are also on Cyprus. Of course, that's really close to Phoenicia. They also have a colony in Utica in Africa. And this is rather close to where the city of Carthage will appear in, I think, 3 episodes. But it's super uncertain. And the Phoenician colonies, they don't leave as good traces as the Greek colonies do. But we will see when the Greeks start colonizing the Mediterranean for real, then the Phoenicians are already there. But they seem to be 100% about finance and earning money and commerce and trade, because they are not conquering anywhere. They are just establishing trading posts, getting stuff, selling stuff, doing business.
Well, money is what has made, has inspired what, almost all conquest?
Yeah, but this is far more commercial than that. So we shall see when we get to Carthage. It's when Carthage enters history, really. That's not until the 6th century BC. Mm-hmm. But then it is really a corporation. It's run like a corporation. Wow. It's very unlike anything else. So the Phoenicians are very fixated with money and profit. You know who isn't?
Shalmaneser.
Actually, the Assyrians are like the second most commercial people.
Oh, okay.
They are really interested in trade. They used to have a trade empire back in the 1800 BC or something.
Okay.
But there are some people who are only interested in being conservatives. And those are the Egyptians.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Everything must remain exactly the same.
Yes, they don't want change at all.
Yes, and in fact, they will not acknowledge change when it comes. They will just keep going.
Wow. And in poor Egypt.
Yes, it's not poor yet, but it will be. In 837 BC, Osorkon II, the great pharaoh, he dies. He ruled from the north as the ruler of the 22nd dynasty, and at his death, he has lost control of southern Egypt. He has ruled from 872 to 837 BC, so has been the pharaoh for 35 years. His grandson, Takelot II F, is the high priest of Amun in Thebes, and he seems to be ruling the southern part of Egypt without listening to his granddad. Still, Osorkon II was one of the stronger rulers of the 22nd dynasty. And they found his tomb. Pierre Monet found his tomb in February 27th in 1939. This tomb was plundered, but it still held riches enough to revise Egyptology, because we thought that the 21st and the 22nd dynasties were really poor. Okay. And this was anything but poor. He was super rich. And for the unplundered tombs of this dynasty and the 21st, they are actually much richer than Tutankhamun's tomb. And Tutankhamun ruled during the New Kingdom. So Egypt is still wealthy. And of course, Egyptian dates are horrible. We talked about that before. They can easily be off by 20 years.
Right.
So much more uncertain than the Assyrian dates. So we need a new pharaoh. And Shoshenq III steps up to the job. And then you think he's related in some way to Osorkon II, but we don't know in what way. And Egyptian kingship goes through the females, goes through the daughters. So the guy who marries the daughter of the pharaoh becomes the pharaoh.
Oh,
but also this is the son. So that's why we normally think that, oh, his son took over. That's natural. But it's only because the son marries the daughter.
Oh, okay.
So it is the guy who marries the eldest daughter that becomes the new pharaoh. And Shoshenq III marries Shesbast-Peru, Osorkon II's daughter. And Shoshenq III will be around in the north. He will not unify Egypt. We know very little about him. And, we'll talk about Takelot II. That was the guy in the south. His son we will talk about, but it's extremely confusing. So I messed it up several times on YouTube when I talked about him. And I hope I can get it right here, but it's really hard because there are two guys named Osorkon, and one is the third and one has a letter, and they seem to be the same person. Or not, but we'll get back to that.
Okay.
Egypt will descend into madness now for us, because it's really hard to tell what's happening there. And it will be going on for over 100 years.
Oh boy.
We're still in 837 BC. And now Shalmaneser III goes into Anatolia against the kingdom of Tabal. And no Assyrian king has gone this far into what is today Turkey. When I started looking at the Assyrian kings, Shalmaneser III struck me as a lesser version of his father. But he is actually doing stuff that no one has done before him. And he's just such a busybody. He's involved in all these wars. It's a war all the time. And I think he has more wars per year than his father has. So once again, they march through the land of the poor Kapti. And they pay tribute. They pass through Melid. They go across Mount Timur, Antitaurus. They are on the Anatolian plateau. And there's a king in Tabal called Tuatte. He has a son called Kiki. And there are 20 kings of Tabal that apparently listen to this king Tuatte. But they are all... they all see the reality of the situation. Shalmaneser III is there with the Royal Assyrian Army.
Right.
And they just have to submit. It's out of their league. If he wants to come here, okay. Time to submit.
Yeah.
And Shalmaneser III marches around on the Anatolian plateau and everybody just bows down and submits. And thus he is done early for the year, but he's close to Kew. He's actually north of Kew now. And it's been then 2 years since he fought Q last time. So he invades Q from the north. Surprise! And still, the king of Q holds out. So next year, he marches to Q immediately and has another war with the king of Q. And he still doesn't win.
What is this king in Q? What is his secret?
Well, he's apparently very successful then against the Assyrians, so we don't get anything about it. And that's the Assyrian way. When things don't go as they planned, they just don't talk about it.
Just sweep that under the rug. Let's just forget
yes.
about it.
But we have this little tiny kingdom which has defied Shalmaneser III for 20 years and now resisted 3 invasions in the span of 4 years. So for 835 BC, Shalmaneser decides to go east instead.
Okay.
There is the small kingdom of Namri. Do you remember Namri?
I remember the name.
Yeah, it was the Kassites that defected from Babylon. Tribal rulers of Babylon. They were like, oh, we are fed up with this crap. And they formed their own little kingdom in the Zagros Mountains on the border of Iran today. And this kingdom was conquered by the Assyrians, made into vassal, and they put Shalmaneser III himself put King Jansu on the throne of Namri. This was in 843 BC, and now 8 years later, King Jansu decides that it's a marvelous idea to stop paying the Assyrians. And this might seem crazy, but the Assyrian tribute is really heavy, and if you haven't seen any Assyrians for 8 years... this might seem like a good idea. You hear that, Shalmaneser III is busy in Kew, and he's going to places where no Assyrian's gone before. No way does he have the time to come and beat us up.
Womp, womp.
He does.
Yeah.
The Royal Army shows up there, and the Kassites, being proud of their... These guys ruled Babylon for 400 years or something like that.
Right.
And they are like, we are proud tribesmen with culture. Surely we can resist the Assyrians. And there's a battle. It ends in a rout for the Kassite army. King Jansu flees to the mountains, but he's captured and taken as a prisoner to Assyria. And that's probably a word you don't want to read, or a sentence you don't want to read on the Assyrian inscriptions, because when people are taken to Assyria's prisoners, you never hear of them again. unless you are at the very end of the empire, because then they will actually mention in the 7th century what happened to the prisoners. And those words are not comforting. There's a king of Elam that appears as an ornament in the king's dining hall and stuff like that.
Wow. So
his head is on a pike.
That's pleasant.
We don't get any information what Babylon thinks about this war. To get to Namri, the Assyrians pretty much has to go through Babylonian territory or take the much harder route through the mountains. But we get no news from Babylon about this. In Babylon, Marduk Sakirshumi the first is the king, and he is the friend of Shalmaneser III. Shalmaneser III put him on the throne.
Right.
He is busy having problems with the Chaldeans in the sea land in the south. They are acting independently in the marshland. And the people of the swamps in the south, they control the trade with Elam in southern Iran. So they are getting more powerful and more wealthy. Marduk Sakishumi I presents a seal to the statue of Marduk in Babylon. And this statue of Marduk will come back to our story all the time, because Marduk is the most important god in Babylonia.
Mm-hmm.
And this statue in the temple is thought of like it is the god. So if you want to go talk to Marduk, you can talk to this statue. If somebody steals this statue, it's really bad. But it's not like that is going to happen.
Yeah. Foreshadowing.
We have some news from Babylonia here. There is an inscription where Marduk Sakishumi gives a great house to a scribe. There is a situation where he can't go to Borsippa because of disturbances. And this is pretty discouraging, because Borsippa is not far away from Babylon. And he has a religious duty to go there, because Borsippa is the city of truth and justice, and very important in the Babylonian thinking. But the king can't go to this nearby city for 17 years.
Why?
Because of the Arameans.
Oh, wow.
Remember the Arameans, they are around still, and they are in the countryside, and they are causing problems for everyone.
Oh, Arameans.
We also see local officials start doing inscriptions during this time. And they seem to become a lot powerful. They seem to be in positions much longer. And it seems that the power of the Babylonian king is, he's losing. The central power is weakening and the local power is growing stronger. But Marduk Sakishumi will be around until 819 BC.
Seems that's like an incredibly long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. But it's 16 years from where we are now. And by that time, the whole Assyrian-Babylonian axis will look much different than it does in 835 BC. We have other neighbors of the Assyrians who are kind of relieved that the Assyrians aren't around in their part of the world. And in 834 BC, we have a new king in Urartu to the north, in the mountains of Armenia. Sarduri I becomes the king. And he moves the capital to Tushpa. It's around Lake Van, the Nairi Sea. It's in Turkey today. This is the borderland between Turkey and Armenia today. High mountains, rich on all kinds of natural resources. And the Russians do what they always do. They build giant fortresses because the Assyrians might come any day. And there's an enormous fortress built around this time by this Sarduri, the first character. And then they are starting to, we can't go south because there are Assyrians to the south. So let's expand in every other direction. So Urartian influence is creeping out of the mountains, and a lot of smaller kingdoms have a relationship to Urartu, like the Assyrian vassals.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But these, the mountain kingdoms seems to be innumerable and sort of have new names every time we hear about them. So they are super hard to keep track of. But the big thing is that the Urartian influence is spreading. And it's actually spreading in a great arc over Assyria. So suddenly Urartu will be able to influence events in Turkey or on the Anatolian plateau and in Syria, and they will also be able to influence events in the east. So it's becoming a threat to Assyria, whereas it earlier has been only a place to go and beat people up. And Urartu is getting stronger, but Shalmaneser III doesn't have the time to deal with this because he must conquer Q, because he can't stand this King Carter guy who has defied him for so long.
He just can't let it go.
No, so he marches out again, goes through this territory of the kings of Kati, and they are getting really sick of this, because Shalmaneser III always comes around, he takes their food, he takes their money, he forces them to go with him. And they can't do anything about it, because if they do, they become the target.
Wow.
And this time, Shalmaneser III managed to get to the capital of Kew, besiege it, and sack it. So Timur, the capital of Kew, falls in 834 BC. And on his way back, Shalmaneser III puts a royal garrison in the city of Muru. It's a city of the Bit Agusi. And this attack severely weakens Q, but King Kati is still around, ruling from a new capital.
Wow.
So it's a Q is still defying Assyrian will. Time to go to Israel then, perhaps.
Sure. Let's head on over and see what's going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on last time, but
right.
We don't know a lot about Yehu and what he does as king of Israel. We know that the Phoenician gods are losing all their influence, pretty much. And the Bible really portrays Yehu as a pure Yahvist, that is, a Jew. He is a monotheist.
Sure.
But there are some weird things that happen. There are gold bulls at Bethel and Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And these are probably icons of worship. So the monotheism is not 100%. We talked about Yehu being of the house of David, right?
Yes.
Earlier, yeah. We don't get any news from Damascus, the eternal enemy of Israel, except that Shalmaneser III just invaded them, but they recovered from it. I believe that Damascus and Israel, surely they fought again, but we don't have any record of it. But they are really arch enemies. And it's troublesome to be arch enemies when there is an even greater threat like the Assyrians. You have to be careful when you fight your arch enemy that the Assyrians aren't around.
Because then you just leave yourself open. And that's just bad for business.
So I bet 835 was a good year when Shalmaneser went east. So they got news. Oh, Shalmaneser going the other way. Okay, let's attack Israel.
Now's our chance.
Yeah. We should mention a bit about China.
Oh, we haven't talked about China in a while. What's going on over there?
There's so much information about the Middle East and so little about China. We have the Gonghae Regency. It's ruling China in the name of Prince Xuan. He's still being educated. He's still a kid. But they are making sure that he will be a good king once his dad dies. Because King Li, the tyrant, he's still the king, but he's in exile. And this regency rules Zhou China. And now I wanted to get into something that I didn't really know where to put. But we talked a lot about Shalmaneser III, and we have a lot of his inscriptions. He's quite good at making inscriptions. But when he does his inscriptions, he puts his title at the beginning of every inscription. And his title is quite long. And there are, like the Black Obelisk, there are several great things that he left us. But the Bronze Gates of Balavat are pretty famous. And these gates are full of inscriptions. They must look very impressive. I haven't seen them. But I thought that you would read the full title of Shalmaneser III in the way he begins every inscription.
Okay. Let me look at this. So these are on actual bronze gates.
Yes.
Are these more? Are these also at the British Museum?
I don't know where they are, actually.
Oh, okay.
So if anybody knows, tell us in the comments.
Yeah, because if these things really exist, it would be spectacular to see.
They do have a lot of history on them as well. So we have one account of the Battle of Karkar is from the Bronze Gates of Balavat.
Wow. So actual history written on a gate.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure.
It's the Assyrian way.
We're just gonna. If you want to come into our city, you're going to see just how badass we are.
You have to read this title first.
Yeah. Okay, stop. Read this. Okay. Let me get into some Shalmaneser.
Give us your best Shalmaneser.
Okay. Let me take a quick drink, because sometimes these are hard on the old pipes.
Think megalomaniac.
Let's see. I am Shalmaneser, the great, the mighty king, king of the universe, king of Assyria, son of Assurbanipal, king of the universe, king of Assyria, grandson of Tukulti-Urta, king of the universe, king of Assyria, the powerful hero who in the four regions of the world gives no quarter, who conquers rebellion, to whose hand all regions of the earth are entrusted, who crushes those who do not submit to Asher, the mighty flood, in whose hands Asher has set the ends of the lands, king of the regions of earth who is covered with splendor, who is fearless in battle, under the yoke of whose dominion mighty and ruthless kings as far as the setting sun have bowed. Shalmaneser, the rightful ruler, priest of Asher, the powerful.
One interesting thing to note there is the way he talks about his dad and his granddad. So it's Ashurnasipal, king of Assyria, king of the universe. Tukulti-Ninurta, king of Assyria, king of the universe. So the Assyrians are pretty proud of their dads. And just note that for the future, because there will be Assyrian kings who are not talking about their dads. And that's a bad sign, because this is the normal Assyrian king attitude to forefathers.
Hmm. Yeah, it's hard to believe that they would just kind of start trying to, you know, push that aside. That seems so important for...
I'm sure Tukulti-Ninurta's dad was on this from the start, and then somebody was like, can we cut somebody? Oh, maybe nobody dare say that to Shalmaneser. So let's review this empire of this powerful king.
Okay.
We are in 833 BC now. They set out in 912 to restore the Middle Assyrian Empire. And somewhere along the line, they just lost sight of that. And now the empire is much bigger than the Middle Assyrian Empire was. There's been these two super powerful kings, Ashurnasipal and Shalmaneser. They have been ruling for 50 years at this point. Ashurnasipal got on the job in 883 BC. And Ashurnasipal's eunuch system, he made 12 provinces of the empire, and he put eunuchs in charge of them. But that system has fallen for some reason. Now there are powerful nobles who control the provinces, and they are starting to try to make sure their sons take over the province when they get old. And there are also powerful nobles who have influence in the capital, whereas no noble dare do anything when Ashurnasipal was around. The capital is in Kala. This is in the heartland of Assyria, in what is today northern Iraq. And I'd like to introduce a couple of other powerful men in the empire.
Sure.
But first, I'd like to note that this could have been the high watermark for the entire Neo-Assyrian Empire. It's a very good time for the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And this is a state which there has not been a state like this, pretty much. Maybe the Empire of Sargon back in the 3rd millennium BC. But this is a super powerful state, and we would still have been talking about it if this was the high watermark, which it isn't. Okay, first we have what is possibly the eldest son, but one of the elder sons. The Assyrian king has a lot of sons. This guy is Ashurdaninpal, different than from Shalmaneser's dad, who was Ashurnasirpal. But this son is Ashurdaninpal, and he's a popular warrior. People like him, and I kind of picture him like a second coming of Ashurnasirpal II. And he is violent. He is a good Assyrian. And he is a bit worried about Dayan Ashur, the field marshal's influence over the king. So he's like, Dad, I should lead the armies instead. Yeah, let's go beat people up. But Shalmaneser III, for some reason, does not designate this guy as the heir. So maybe he's like, oh, you're too violent. You won't be a good king. So that if that was the case, he's very, very violent.
What would it take for these guys to say, whoa, 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 maybe you're going too far?
There are other cases of that, actually, when people are like, oh, you are going too far. So, but it would probably take a lot. So we have a younger son, Shamshir Rahman. He is wiser. He's quite the statesman. He knows how to talk to people. And he's probably ultra-violent as well, but not as violent as his elder brother. But he's not popular with the Assyrian crowd. But he is designated the heir. So Shalmaneser III says, you will be the next king. And that makes him... soon he will have absolute power, be the king. And the position of the king is almost godlike in Assyria, because he's the high priest of Ashur, so he can interpret the one god's true will. Mm-hmm. And he's the ultimate commander of the army, and he decides everything. And the elder son, then, Ashurdaninpal, is not happy about this. There's a lot of things Ashurdaninpal is not happy about, and that's one thing. So we have a little situation brewing in the Assyrian capital. And then something happens in 832 BC. The Assyrians attack Urartu finally.
Okay.
Just like the Urartians expected. But Shalmaneser III is not going with the army. So this...
What?
Yeah, this... did this ever happen since the empire started? Probably not that we know of.
Right.
But Shalmaneser III stays behind, and he sends the field marshal, Dayan Ashur, as the commander of the army. And this is probably Shalmaneser III's great mistake, which will do bad things for his legacy, because he did what his father never did. He grew old and couldn't go on campaign.
Wow.
Whereas Ashurnasipal just ran on campaigns until one day he dropped dead. We don't know what happened, but there is no sign that Ashurnasipal II ever felt any feelings. But here we actually have the words of Shalmaneser III, and you can do that too.
Should I make him sound feebler in these words, or
a little feebler?
I gave orders and sent Dian Asher, Tur Danu, the wise chief of my army and camp.
And of course, this was a good time to attack Urartu because there was a new king, and there was these construction projects happening, and Dian Asher finds Sarduri and his army near the river Arsanias and claims a victory, but nothing really changes in the situation between the two countries, so that's probably an empty Assyrian inscription victory, because the Assyrians always win. But this means that Dian Asher is now the most powerful non-king in the history of the Neo-Assyrian Empire that we have met. The field marshal is really important for Assyria now. In 831 BC, King Mattan I of Tyre, Phoenicia, back in Lebanon, he dies. He was probably very, very young at this point, and it was unexpected. He ruled for 8 years. Tyre is the main Phoenician power center. And here we have to introduce some characters in Tyre as well, because these people are much more famous than Dian Asher and Assurdaninpal. So the son of Mattan I is Pygmalion. And Pygmalion is not as famous as you might think when you hear the name, because the name refers to another character normally, like the play and stuff. It's right, not about right. This guy. But there are still a lot of legends about Pygmalion. So, and it's weird because there are signs that Mattan I was very young, but he has two grown children. So, how did that happen? Pygmalion has an elder sister, but we can expect that the sister and Pygmalion are probably extremely young, then maybe like around 18, 19.
Okay.
The elder sister is named Dido. Mm-hmm. And Mattan's... I don't know if this is like the Phoenician succession system or something, but it's, or if it was Mattan the first will, but these two siblings, Pygmalion and Dido, they are supposed to be the coup rulers. Yeah, it's because Pygmalion is underage, so maybe he's only 15.
Okay.
And so they are supposed to rule together. And that never works out, does it?
Not usually.
So Mattan had a younger brother as well called Assurbas. He is the high priest of one of the Phoenician gods. And he is super wealthy. And he marries Dido. And I think this is a power play on Dido's part. So if she has Assurbas on her side, then her little brother can't take the throne.
All right. So we have enough resources.
Yep. So it seems that Dido has the upper hand here, being married to her uncle with all his wealth. But the people, they are not into this being ruled by this woman. So they favor the boy king. And Pygmalion gets some ideas here. He wants not only to take rule of Tyre from his sister, but he wants to rule all of Phoenicia, because Tyre is the strongest Phoenician city. So he's making plans to deal with this pesky sister and her ultra-rich husband. And we will dedicate a whole episode to this drama in the next decade. So remember, Dido versus Pygmalion rich uncle.
Man, that sounds like a play already.
It does sound like a play, but this is not what the Pygmalion play is about.
Right.
Which I thought when I started researching this. Okay, in 831 BC, somebody decides to rebel against Shalmaneser. It's King Lubarna II of Pathin. He has been a loyal vassal, and he is not a rebel. Sorry, he is assassinated by the rebel. So a usurper, Suri, claims the throne of Pathin. So Dian Asher once again has to go out with the royal army. He comes to Pathin. And when the royal army stands outside the capital, they don't even have time to start the siege. The capital of Pathin is Kumulna.
Okay.
With the royal army outside and Dian Asher there in all his glory, the frightened inhabitants of the city, they just take their new king and his supporters, and they kicked them out of the city.
Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, so Dionysus just gets his enemies delivered. But he thinks this is a great triumph. He erects a stele. He takes it takes a lot of booty. I don't know if he just took the money of the guys who made the rebellion or if he just took everything. But he does appoint a new king of Pattin. And Pattin returns to vassal status. But this occupies the royal Assyrian army for the whole year. And in the next year, Dionysus once again goes to the north. And this shows that Urartu is becoming a huge problem. But we don't have a record of this campaign. We get only the... There is... There is a record... The greatest Assyrian record is the one sentence per year where they talk about one guy who is important for that year, and then they say one thing the king did. And this year, we just know that Dionysus attacks Urartu. So he's not the king, and he's still... yeah. But now there are a lot of problems in Assyria. We have this dissension between the princes. We have this field marshal running around. And it seems that Shalmaneser is slipping into dementia. Hmm. But he doesn't have the decency of dying. So we're going to have a very weak old king of Assyria. And it will turn bad for the empire. But that is not what we are going to talk about in the next episode.
What are we going to talk about?
We are doing a special! Yay! Sometimes
it's a special episode.
Sometimes we leave the narrative and we go into something else. And now we're going to talk about the laws, the justice system. And it's incredibly hard to pin down to date. So we're talking about like 1000 BC. But the laws in 830 BC are pretty similar. So we're going to take a look at ancient laws of the early Iron Age in the Middle East, and see what kind of justice system they had. And that's it for this episode.
All right. Please, please, please go to the YouTube page, YouTube/Fan of History. There, subscribe, like, share. Let us know what you think. Also,
yeah. Can I say something about YouTube?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, right now I am working on the 720s BC episodes on YouTube, so you can really read ahead on the test. And I did episodes on the Nubian invasion that finally gives us some order to Egypt. That happens in 725 BC. I am right now working on the Lelantine War, which is an event in Greece. So those are the things you can find very soon on the YouTube channel.
All right. Yeah, go ahead. Check them out. Also, on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to this, give us a review. We would love to hear from you. So, for this week, I am Brennan.
And I'm Dan.
And this has been The Fan of History.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.